Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, July 13th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered, and these tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. On the website at whyagain.org, if you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it out, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. Hope people do that soon and often, because it frequently leads to questions, comments, answers, testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And, or you can call us at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will put a little question mark or an icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. We specifically appreciate when people do that, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work, which is to be of service. And if there's a way in which we can be of service to you, please let us know. Again, the number is 563-999-3581. And press 1. We had a support group last night, and we'll have another one on Thursday. And last night we were enjoying some teaching, some questioning from David White. David White, W-H-Y-T-E, an English-Irish poet philosopher who is one of my favorites and has been for a lot of years now, and I thought it would be worth sharing his perspective because it is so similar to so many major themes in A Course in Miracles and The Way of Mastery. And he has a very an eloquent way of expanding language so that it can stimulate our minds to broaden our exploration of various concepts and various life events. And so, you know, I think three or four times in his talk, and before I reined myself in and didn't do it anymore, but three or four times I stopped and said, hey, what he's talking about here is exactly what the Way of Mastery talks about when it says we need to understand our divine ignorance. We need to understand how little we know about our bodies and the things that we use and interact with on a daily basis, and how pervasive the pattern is in our culture that we're conditioned and we're rewarded for having the answers. Quick, easily spoken, pat answers, whether it's in school or it's at the job. And he's helping us question and explore and observe for ourselves how ludicrous it is to think we know we've got a pat answer for this multifaceted, complex, ever-changing life experience that each and every one of us is having. So that all the different ways that I run into these, the same core principles spoken about or sung about or acted out through these various ways, it gives me a depth and a richness, and it accelerates my ability to comprehend some of these more advanced concepts that are just so opposite of or antithetical to everything about my family life and my training in school, whether it was kindergarten or grade school or high school or college or graduate school. And the goal for me is practical shifting of whatever I'm doing that's not working so well for me. So finding a different way to be with the thoughts, the energies, the emotions that I find difficult, finding a different way to be very present in my life and interacting with people differently, rather than continually repeating the same rigid patterns and bumping into the same unpleasant discomforts. So I highly recommend it. Apparently he's been doing this for a while, but he'll do three Sundays in a month. And I imagine he doesn't do it every month, so it's every other month or, you know, maybe four times a year. But he'll explore different themes, and he'll talk for an hour and then have a question and answer session. And it's a, I don't know, I think it's a $60 investment to get to be able to listen in live and or have access to the video and audio for 6 months or whatever after the fact. So if you wanted more information about that, you could look it up at David White, WHYTE.com. So, yesterday I was trying to bring in awareness of David Foster Wallace's commencement speech titled This is Water. And I've had a comment or two from people that they weren't quite sure what I was driving at there or why I would bring that up and not read the whole thing. And it's lengthy. And so I'm not going to read the whole commencement speech, but the idea of it is as we get busy as adults, as we get swept up in the culture, as we get our attention is pulled in this direction or that direction by this shiny object or that new device or this TV series we've got to listen to or, you know, this author that we have to read, everything that she writes, we lose the present moment awareness. We're always either running from stuff in our past or running towards stuff in our future that we think is going to make the difference or bring us comfort or end our pain, etc. And David Foster Wallace was trying to tell this group of graduating seniors that the value of their education is really rooted in their ability to be more aware, to use their thinking and observing and questioning processes for themselves rather than just being swept up by the family or the culture or their peer group. And it's the everyday interactions, just almost exactly the way of mastery would say, this life. Your very, what you would consider ordinary life, the day-to-day, get up, make the bed, brush the teeth, do the dishes, this is the perfect place for you to be, to learn and grow, and to learn to cherish, to learn to appreciate the gift of life and consciousness itself. And that's essentially the same message as David Foster Wallace's commencement speech from 2005 titled, This is Water. You're probably interacting with people on a daily basis who either themselves as individuals or because of your interaction with them contain the most perfect lessons for you to grow, to strengthen your core sense of self, to understand the miracle of life expressing in, through, as, and around you. And yet, most of us have been trained or conditioned to think that we have to go acquire something new. We have to go get new friends or relationships or houses or cars or degrees, because whatever it is that we have already is woefully lacking. And the Way of Mastery and David Foster Wallace are basically trying to wake us up to the fact that this is it. Your life, just as it is right now, contains what you need to grow, to expand, to have gratification, appreciation, bliss, contentment. And that's essentially what the Way of Mastery is trying to help us wake up to, the idea that we are not just the body, you are unlimited spirit. Once you wake up to the fact that you are unlimited spirit, once you wake up to the fact that the thoughts that Michael Rice would call mind energy that you have access to, that you can choose to direct in one direction or another, this is the mechanism that creates your experience of life. And yesterday we started working on Lesson 16 from The Way of Mastery, and I've had some trepidation about how soon we get into this and how fast we go through it, because I'd like to have it be integrated into the work we've done in the first 15 lessons. My mind experienced this 16th lesson as a rather abrupt departure. And it's taken me quite a bit of repetition and reading and going through it to understand that it is possible to integrate this into everything that we've already been exposed to. And it's just another way to start talking about giving the conscious logical mind something to chew on, as it talked about in a previous lesson, so that I can convince myself that it might be worth doing the exercises. The conscious logical mind and all of its efforts and all of its trying to figure it out will never yield benefits or results in this arena, in the arena of my spirit, my emotions, etc. And yet, if I step into the use of tools or exercises or practices, those benefits start to express. They start to bubble up. They start to blossom in my life. But if I can't get my conscious logical mind to think, well, there's a good reason that you would spend 5 minutes several times a day looking at objects in your field of experience and just understanding how little you know about it and questioning or allowing the observation that I don't know where this thing was originated in thought or manufactured or where the substances that were used to manufacture it came from. Or when was the first time any human being ever had a thought of making something like a pencil or an eraser? And so to be in the experience of the truth of how little I understand, how little I know, is an expansive experience. It helps me open myself to more learning. It helps me practice living in the question, as Rilke would call us to. So I look at Lesson 16 as a way to give my conscious logical mind something to hold on to as a framework as I work to expand my ability to let go of having the conscious logical mind being in the driver's seat. Because right in the very first lesson on the fifth page of this, it says, look, the conscious logical mind has a very limited role in your life. It was designed to be a humble, and if you'll excuse the expression, a very stupid servant of your higher self, of your awakened heart. And the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. So with that understanding, here's a little something for my intellect to busy itself with as I try to encourage myself to take a risk, to let go of my identification with the egoic thoughts, to let go of my need to be right, as we do in each and every reality management worksheet process. And so it starts talking in Lesson 16 about how do you begin to experience or understand your creation. And your creation begins long before there was any physicality of any kind, long before there was the Big Bang, long before there was a dust cloud that began to birth suns, long before there were any suns that went supernova and dispersed their molecules and atoms into the universe and then collected in planets. Long before any of that, your essence and the creation of your essence and consciousness and intelligence began. So we'll take a moment here and answer a call from area code 541. You're in the air.
Yes, this is Celinda.
Welcome, Celinda.
I have been meaning to text you, to email you or get on the program in time to let you know that I think I have said this once before, but I fully trust your intuition and insight and inspiration in relation to continuing on or not. So I'm very happy with whatever is. I wanted to share that with you. Also, when you were talking about a dog chewing on a bone, it made me laugh because the image that did come to my mind was of Chapter 16 possibly being a tidbit to throw the intellect so it can calm itself down and wait to be shown and to entertain a story, a metaphor, a story, something that, like a dog chewing on its bone, who's very happy, feels very supported and loved and all of that, and said the intellect would be the same way. And I think you also said something about your appreciation for hearing the word, quote unquote, in from so many different languagings and perspectives and cultures. And it's very funny because I was just reading a little treatise by Gangaji this morning, and it's titled Our Responsibility for Peace. And in her beginning, you know, the little place where they acknowledge their gratitude to people and things like that, she put down, may all being awaken to itself. And it just jumped out of the page at me because that's how I perceived the whole Chapter 15 and all the preceding chapters talking about Creator. And I just wanted to share that with you because now I have a Sufi perspective on the Aramaic gospel. I have the traditional Christian perspective. I have my Buddhist perspectives with Pema Chodron and others, and now I'm looking at, besides my yoga, I now have a wonderful Hindu perspective, and it just brings me to see how everything is so absolutely inclusive if we were just to see it that way.
So is this thing from Gangaji called A Prayer for Peace, Taking Responsibility?
No, it's just a little pamphlet, and it's called Our Responsibility for Peace. And I have one short quote from her that I could read to you. It's not in the book, but it was one I picked up from somewhere. I think it was a bookmark that had her face on it. But if you'd like to hear it, I'll read it to you. It's about three sentences.
Okay.
Grace comes to get you. Knocks on your door and says, you have a chance to be at peace. In your willingness to take this chance, to accept this invitation to be at peace, you have the opportunity to share peace everywhere.
Yep, it sounds like the Way of Mastery, saying every moment is another opportunity for you to choose to teach only love. And you do
exactly.
The teaching only love by choosing to share only the loving thoughts. And as we were talking about before, since all minds are joined, we can fully expect and we can observe that we have a lot more thoughts that are not loving. Random thoughts, neutral thoughts, aggressive, violent thoughts, confused thoughts. We have these. And they move through our field of awareness. We don't have to value them and we don't have to share them. We can just observe them with childlike innocence and curiosity and jocularity, if you will, and give it a little chuckle and let it go. And then choose to value, add energy to, and share only those thoughts for love, loving thoughts.
Yes. And that's precisely what she's saying in her language and through this whole little pamphlet. And she connects it to the earth as a sanctuary and to our thousands of years of putting violent thoughts and violent actions on the face of the planet, on each other and all life, and how war and all of that we have been talking about. And it's a delightful little pleasant Hindu dish at the Great Smorgasbord of Life. So I offer it as a possibility for anyone, our responsibility for peace, to share.
Wonderful. Thank you. It is right in alignment with what we're trying to be aware of and grow and extend our awareness of with the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery.
Exactly.
So I had another hand go up. I will turn on the microphone for, I believe this is Susan.
Okay.
Hi.
Thank you.
Hi, Celinda.
I'm going to unmute.
To say that again, Celinda?
I'm going to mute because my husband's in the house and he has chores he needs to do and stuff, so I'm going to mute myself. Blessings to you both.
Thank you. I wanted to say I agree with Celinda. Go ahead. And I wasn't able to hear. I listened yesterday, but was in a state of disturbance over my grandson and something that's been going on with him. So I just didn't absorb it. I listened to the words and they just bounced off me. And I went to the archive, your list of recorded ones, and I couldn't get in there for some reason. And it may be my phone or so I couldn't re-listen. I wanted to listen again. But what I want to say is, on your recommendation, I opened up on my full computer screen the Webb telescope images, and I got the feeling that those images need chapter 16. I was so blown away and relieved. You know, usually, like when I was a kid, I'd go to New York City for one thing or another, and I felt so small, like, oh, there are so many people in the world. I am nothing. But when I watched these pictures, I felt exactly the opposite. I felt as if I was expanding to meet that hugeness and that I didn't understand it and would love to understand it, but I could feel it. And I think maybe the Way of Mastery chapter 16 might be something that goes with it somehow. And I don't even know what I'm talking about, but I'm game if you're up for reading it. And even if you start again, I'm just saying, for me, I would love it, or at least if you got the recording and it's available, I could listen and then join you from there.
Well, I'll check. I didn't make time yesterday to edit out the first half and post it on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. So hopefully the recording is there and I can find it through Blog Talk Radio, and I'll edit it and we'll see. The thing that's been clicking in the past couple of days is to just talk about this as a way to give my conscious logical mind something to hold on to as a viable set of reasons or motivations to step into the use of the exercises or tools, and to not worry about and to watch any tendency for my mind to say, well, that's not right and that couldn't be, and I have read science books that say this or that, or to just put all of that aside and do what, you know, the Way of Mastery and the Reality Management Worksheet call us to do on a regular basis, which is cancel my need to be right and step into a practice of living in the question. living with the awareness of my pervasive and that some would call it divine ignorance, and to understand that that recognition of how little I know is a prerequisite for expanding what I do, what I can experience. So that's how I'm approaching this sharing lesson 16. Not let us tell you what's true from a scientific perspective. Let us tell you what we can prove. Not that. Simply, let's play with some ideas. Let's understand that there's a way to talk about consciousness and your spirit, your unlimited spirit, as existing before anything physical, before any bodies, before any height or weight or distance, before any planets, before any atoms. And we're just playing with this concept and then taking that experience that we might usher ourselves into, taking that back into the practice of abiding for 5 minutes as though we were the Christ, or as though we were actively creating our experience with our thoughts, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where we are.
That's a great idea. I see. I get it. That's a great idea. There's a phrase you just said, or maybe it's in the, you said something about we are part, this is the us that was there before time began. Or can you backtrack, or was it off the top of your head?
Well, it's what we're being asked to wake up to is that we are unlimited spirit, right? You're not just the body. That was in lesson 13. That's the title of lesson 13, the whole series of, well, let's wake up to how you are unlimited spirit. You are not just the body, right? Now, lesson 14, okay, if that's true, what would be a wise use of time? And then lesson 15 says, okay, let's get more specific. You are always free to choose either love or fear. And, you know, the five-word summary of the Way of Mastery, the choice is always yours. Okay, but now who is you? Is it Tim Hayes, a certain age, a certain gender, a certain location on the planet? Or is you, the essence of you, this consciousness that always was and always will be, that's connected to every other consciousness? And how can we start to expand an experience of that? Well, to begin with, if there's any truth to that, consciousness existed before anything physical, before a planet, before an atom, before any emotion. Consciousness precedes all of that. And so who you are, this spark of awareness that you are, can become more aware than you've ever imagined. You can become aware of things. You can become aware of things outside of time. You can become aware of things all through time. You can become aware of your true nature differently than you've ever been exposed to. Because everything that you've been exposed to before this began with, you are the body. This is your nose. This is your finger. This is your elbow. You're over here, and Johnny and Sally and Barb and Ken are over there as different from you. So you've been conditioned to believe a certain level of pictures that your brain is showing you, and that's all there is. You've been conditioned to believe that that's all there is. What Way of Mastery is doing, what Course in Miracles was trying to do, was to expand our ability to perceive beyond the senses, to experience at a broader, deeper level than we can experience if we're relying specifically on the five senses. So that's the way I'm approaching lesson 16. It's just some thoughts about how I might keep the conscious mind occupied while I step into the experience of expanding my awareness, for want of a better word or phrase. Did that cover what you were asking me to step back and talk about?
Sure, it did. And there are some words in there which I'm so full of those images, and somehow they seem to belong with the text you're going to read. And if you're thinking about having it feed into ways you can approach doing the exercises, that's great. I may be using it all in a different way. I just don't know, but I'm excited about it.
Well, and one of the things I wanted people to pay attention to from those images from the Webb telescope are that when you see an image and it's crisp and clear and there's five galaxies clustered together, and of course hundreds of thousands of stars beyond it, and you're looking at that picture, what the scientists want you to understand is that's not the universe. That's not a wide angle lens looking at everything you can see from the northern hemisphere. That's the amount of the sky that would be blocked out if you took a grain of sand between your thumb and forefinger and held it out at arm's length. Whatever portion of the sky was blocked out by that grain of sand, that's what you're seeing in that picture.
I remember you said that yesterday. You said a golf ball, but who cares? I mean, it's just huge beyond huge.
Yes, it's huge beyond our mind's ability to comprehend. Because our mind, the way it's been developed, has been conditioned within the realm of the physical body.
Yeah. But Dr. Kim, it seems as if, well, for me, the effect of looking at that was that all my concerns seemed to fade into a distant, like into a distant star. It isn't as if they were nothing, but it offered a kind of perspective. And it was almost like a big joke. It's like, what are you fussing about? And it seemed funny even. And I'm still fussing about things, but in a very different way, and maybe this will pass. I feel as if it's been like having a vision to see those and to also have gone so far into my own work with all those worksheets I did during the period of 50 days of Easter. Anyway, it's a convergence, and it's just very personal, I guess, but it's very nice.
Yes, and it is that idea of expanding and growing. That's what all of this work is about.
I felt as if I got an infusion of having done a whole pile of worksheets without doing anything at all except looking.
That sounds like a delightful experience. And, you know, the images from the Webb telescope have had that impact on me several times already, and it brings to mind the story of how President Clinton used to have a rock from the moon, and he kept it on one of the conference tables in the center of the table, and when these global leaders would be around the table arguing and bickering and getting all emotional about this and that, he would just stop and say, hey, does anybody know what this is? Think about this.
Yeah.
This rock came from the moon.
That's it. That's
just
it.
Just to shift perspective enough that that we understand that we're really, you know, getting all bent out of shape about a little clump of dust on the back of an elephant. and we're missing the grandeur of the elephant and you know, and its environment and the planet that it's on, and we're just arguing about that little clump of dust on its back.
Well, it's kind of amazing.
Go ahead. It's kind of amazing
that there is healing in different things, and they're available. Like today, I was walking in the park, and I've been noticing trees in a different way, and I noticed a tree I had never laid eyes on before, but it's been standing there for the millions of times I've walked by that tree. It's just a way of, as you said, expanding. I feel as if in a small way, expansion is being, we're being sort of having our ankles bitten to see differently. And seeing differently is like a healing.
Yes, it is a healing. You know, all of these great spiritual traditions would have us understand that every argument we have, every upset we generate, is no more relevant than that little clump of dust or dirt on the back of the elephant, that we're missing the big picture. And that this is why, you know, the 10 bottom line observations, one of them says, if I have a negative thought about myself or somebody else or a negative emotion active in my mind, I can instantly know three things. This is a lie or based in a falsehood. This is an old tape playing from the past. It's not about the present moment situation. And if I let myself sit here and think, speak, or act based on that negative thought or emotion, I'm just going to make my situation worse. It can't ever get better by me acting from the negative perception or emotion. Every time I'm upset, the great spiritual teachings want me to know I'm off the mark. I'm upset because I'm off the mark. It's as though there's this built-in alarm system to wake me up to the fact that I'm pouring all of my mind energy into a pattern of thoughts that's creating pain, that's blocking me from seeing the truth of life, that's blocking me from a direct experience of the miracle of life expressing in, through, as, and around me in this moment, and expressing in, through, as, and around the people I'm interacting with, which is why the Way of Mastery has this one exercise in the 10th lesson. I chose to label it as an exercise where it says, you know, take a breath and restore your awareness to your true nature, reconnect to the Holy Spirit or whatever you want to call it, and you will be transformed in that moment so that in the next moment when you look out through your eyes, you won't see a stranger in front of you. You'll see one who longs as you long, aches as you ache, suffers as you suffer, hopes for peace the way you hope for peace. And in that next moment, you will be able to extend to them the very peace that they seek because you've given it to yourself, you've recognized it as your true nature, and you extend it to them. Regardless of my upset, I could choose to commit to teach only love every moment by sharing only loving thoughts.
Yep, and I love that you also allowed that there's garbage in our brains, and there will be, and it's just there. That's been one of the things that I have had inner protests about. Well, what about the garbage and garbage? And you're saying, yeah, it's there. So what? Just turn away from it. Let it sit there. Just don't give it any energy. That, to me, is a totally redeeming thought.
Well, and, you know, the social media stuff these days is so pervasive that I saw an image, somebody sent me an image of a family of kids, I don't know, 6 or 8 kids, little kids, like grade school kids, and they're out with their parents or aunts and uncles, you know, we don't get the family tree. But they're holding a sign that says F-U-C-K, the current president, with the American flag, and the adults are flipping the bird, and they're out at some kind of a public demonstration, and there's all of this venom and vitriol and shouting going on, and these kids are soaking it up, right? This is they're being taught to hate other human beings. And that's a real thing that's happening, right?
Right.
And then so many of the comments from the social media are name-calling the adults in that photograph. These people are disgusting. These people are stupid. These people are teaching hatred. These people are pigs, et cetera. And it's right. just more of the same, right? If I generate hatred towards somebody who's experiencing hatred, I'm just demonstrating that I'm looking in the mirror, that we're all the same. And it's the instant that I start to judge someone as separate or distant, different from me, that I validate the truth that we're all the same. Because the only reason they could choose to hate somebody else is because they're living in the dream of separation, because they've convinced themselves that they're different and they're right and the other person is wrong. And when I look at them and say, oh, how silly that is and how stupid that is and how hateful that is, I'm doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're all in this together. The only significant difference between you and any person that's ever lived is the degree to which you're able to live in the awareness, the realization that we're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference of any significance between you and anyone who's ever lived is your ability to live in the realization that we are all the same.
And you look out at those pictures of the Webb telescope, and they show these huge nebulae or whatever they are, and dispersing clouds and galaxies that are breaking apart and galaxies that are coming together. And one commentator said, we are all made of this stuff, every one of us. And that's sort of like a physicalization of what you just said.
Yeah, but what our, you know, right here in the Way of Mastery in the 13th and now again in the 16th lesson, what they're trying to wake us up to is that's just the physical body. That's not our essence.
Mm-hmm.
That we're not made of that stuff, that the consciousness of spirit, and we are all that, existed before there was a dust cloud, before there was an atom or a molecule or a planet or a nebulae, etc. And that's why we're going so slowly into this lesson 16, and we're raising the warning flag to say, please watch the tendency for your Western mind to try and interpret this literally and argue from a scientific perspective about this or that. That's not what this is about. This is about softening and opening and expanding so that we might have an experience of something different than what the conscious logical mind can offer. To expand our experience outside of the strictly physical realm.
That's good. I took the physical picture as proof of our connection beyond the physical, but you're taking it from the other side and having the consciousness / love be the first thing before anything. That's a better way to look at it for sure.
Well, that's my take on what's being offered here in the Way of Mastery, in the Way of Transformation, is waking up, transforming our actual experience of ourselves, our actual definitions of ourselves as being just the mind and the body. That we're transforming that into an awareness that the essence of who or what we are is consciousness, and that existed before anything physical existed. And it will exist long after everything physical has passed away.
Sorry about the beast. Grand dog barking. So, but we took part in that. We are that consciousness. We were there at the beginning, all of us together, somehow. Anyway, it's just a friendly thought. It's incomprehensible, but wonderful.
Yeah, and it's just about opening ourselves to the possibility of experiencing some aspects of that, right? Because we've been trained and conditioned to rely so heavily upon what our physical senses can share with us, or what we can extrapolate from what they share with us. And this experience of the Way of Mastery and this deeper teaching is trying to help us understand that there's a lot more going on here than just the atoms and molecules and energies in your physical body.
Mm.
And it's a practice, right? One of the things that popped into my head the other day, I was out in nature, and I realized that there was a movement from left to right in my field of view, and started way out in the periphery. And before I raised my head, I recognized, oh, that's a green heron. Mm. And I just chuckled because I remember when I was in college and I had a friend who said that they were into bird watching, and I thought, number one, that's ridiculous. Number two, I could never do that because my eyesight isn't good enough, or I can't hold all those images or whatever. The point is, over time, you know, over the past 40 years, 50 years, whatever it's been, I have been looking more for birds, buying bird books, taking pictures of birds, and now just this weird thing is a lot of people that know me come to me with a picture of a bird or ask me when they're with me what kind of bird was that, as though I'm some great expert, right? I've just developed this capacity by practicing looking at the birds on the wire and then looking them up when I get to where I'm going, or watching a bird in flight and making a guess about. So I'm attuning myself to that aspect of being outdoors and in nature. And I've expanded my ability to experience and recognize and integrate the light waves that bounce off of these creatures, or these energy packets that we call creatures, as they're moving around. I've expanded my ability through practice. And that's what the Way of Mastery is asking us to do. Expand our ability to experience ourselves as being more than just the body. How do you do that? With practice. Like Michael Rice says, the three Ps: practice, practice, practice. The more we read and reread a book like The Way of Mastery, slowly and carefully, the more we question, what could this mean? Not question it as though that can't be right, but just how might this be true? How might this be like some other teachings that I've encountered? What more can I get from this if I look for the similarities between Lesson 15 and 16 in The Way of Mastery and a reading by Gangaji about our responsibility to peace? Just practicing, immersing, and expanding my awareness yields results. I don't know what those results are going to look like. I can't predict them. I can't manage them. I don't need to. But I will expand my ability to experience things by putting myself in the place where I'm engaging these practices or tools or questioning. Making sense?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Dr. Tim.
Well, we have about 4 minutes left. I'm going to turn on the microphone for, I think it's Anne. Is this Anne?
Yes. I just wanted to chime in quick to what Celinda said and what Susan was saying, that, you know, you making the decision about going slower, because from what I've been listening to, right, you've had the experience, because you went over and over and over the lessons, and I think that your perception of what you're thinking, we're out here probably doing the same thing, and I agree with some of what Susan was saying, that slowing down is a good thing for me anyway. So, yeah, I appreciate how you're doing it and when you're doing it. Thank you.
Well, you're quite welcome and deserving.
And blessings.
Blessings. So any last comments, Susan, for this first hour?
Well, it just translates into feeling freer with my grandson. I realized that I got my universe very, very small. He has had a relapse of some sort. He had an outburst, much like his raging father, and he had a power person relapse. And it was quite ugly, and I went down the tubes. And but the next day, we mended the fence, and I both have hope, and I'm not holding on to hope. I feel as if just the stuff of the universe looks loving. It looks beautiful, and I feel as if I can just remember that and be open and loving and beautiful toward him and hope not to cling to outcomes. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I will hold that same for you and send you loving thoughts and blessings for you and your entire family. I will mute you so you can listen into the second hour. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
You're entirely welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. Thank you. So welcome to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, July the 13th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. And we're glad that everybody's with us. Quite a few people on the switchboard. Hello, Bob, in the chat room. Missed you for a few days. Glad you're back. And we'll give Michael just a minute to get dialed in. And sometimes Blog Talk won't let two hosts be on at the same time, so he has to wait and dial in after Dr. Tim has hung up. And so that's why we do the switch usually about a minute early. And I invite you to go to the website and see what all's going on there. And, Michael, I was just getting ready to make announcements for this week, but I'll let you go ahead and do it. Welcome.
Oh, cool. Thank you, dear heart. So announcements. Well, let's see. Our first one is tomorrow afternoon at 3:30. We'll be doing the live Hear My Voice, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Book Study Club. So at 3:30, if you want to join us tomorrow, there's a Zoom link in the events page, ohyagain.org. There's the events page. Come and join us. And that'll start at 3:30 tomorrow. It's 8:30 in the evening in London, England, and that's the group that's hosting the book study. It's a delight to be doing that. And then on Saturday at 11 o'clock Eastern Time, we'll be doing a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Club. And that happens once a month, the second Saturday of each month. This month we postponed it by a week because I was out of town for last Saturday. So Saturday, 11 o'clock Eastern time. If you're not a member of that club, you can join us, and you can sign up in to a number of different ways. You can do a single session, one event, and that would be starting at 11 o'clock or on Saturday. And that usually runs until, depending how much processing work there is to do in it, we'll do a live still point breathing session with folks on Zoom. And it usually finishes between 1 and 2 o'clock. And then on Tuesday evening following that, we'll do our processing session that sort of rounds that out and gives people a chance to share what they've learned, what insights have come, and ask questions and look at what their next piece of work is. So if you want to join us for that, you can send Jeannie, if you've got my number, you're welcome to call me to get set up for it, or you can email Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. So Jeannie at whyagain.org, let her know you want to join us and make sure you leave your name and phone number. And I'll get back to you to get you set up for that. We've got a small but really committed group. The process has been going on for several months now. And you can sign up for a single session. You can do a package of three sessions or you can do the full year. And the price drops each time that you move to the next level. If you decide that you want to just try one session out, you can do that. The cost is $150, and then if you want to do three sessions, it's $125 per, and if you do one and you decide you want to go for the three, then you can upgrade, and that'll drop the price of each session to $125, or if you decide at some point you want to upgrade to the full year, then it drops it to $900 for 12 sessions, so significant savings. And just you can try it out and upgrade it if you choose, or just do the one or three sessions. And I wanted to talk a little bit. The guidance today was to tap into and talk about the still point breathing process, and recognizing that when we live in a state where we're continuously, or especially when under stress, holding the breath, that's a way of shutting down information flow in the mind. It's interesting when you talk about the power of the breath, and you know, over the years, I've been doing the still point process, developed it about 40 years ago, and I've just been watching people just open up so much of what's been hidden in their lives, and of course, doing that for myself, it's been just an awesome, awesome tool, and it's a way of using the breath to overcome what for most people is a lifetime of subventilation, of not breathing sufficiently to keep a proper energy flow, keep a proper fuel. It's like the breath is the fuel, our physiology. You know, it's the one thing we can't live very long without. And so the still point is kind of like doing a makeup for the times we haven't breathed. And what we find is that when people hold their breath, it stops the flow of mental information. It's kind of like a physical form of denial. Oh, there's something I don't want to look at, something I don't want to feel. You know, you look at somebody when they're hurt and they steel themselves by holding their breath, and it shuts down, awareness shuts down the flow of information within the system. And so using the still point breath process, And it's a process that I only teach in person. It's not something I ever write about or, you know, offer people videos to do on their own. It's something that you have to have more personal guidance and instruction on. So that's what we'll do with that session on Saturday. So if anybody wants to join us, that would be awesome. In terms of physiological shifts that take place, it's one of the most powerful tools we have. And the reason for that, you know, there are all kinds of explanations. If you look at, you know, energy and the catalyst for energy, when you add the right catalyst, then energy moves. When you withhold, then energy stops moving. and the person who extracts their breath from an experience tends to shut down awareness of whatever that experience is trying to deliver to them, because it literally fuels the movement of energy within our structure. If you go back into the ancient Aramaic language, in the creation story, the Western creation story, it says, and the creator sent out spirit. But actually in Aramaic, what it says is, creator sent out the breath. And when we cut ourselves off from the empowerment that comes with the breath, life isn't going to last very long in the structure. And if you want to enhance aliveness, it can be enhanced immeasurably by restoring yourself to the full proper flow of the breath and remembering, especially in moments of stress, to keep the breath moving. The reason it's called still point is because there comes a point in the breathing process where, as opposed to the breath being held, the breath spontaneously stops. So instead of holding on as though to empty oneself of the breath, it's a point where one is totally filled with the breath and there's no longer a need. It's like, you know, the mind has been fully powered, and when the breath spontaneously stops, that's when one goes into what I like to refer to as a superconductor state. You know, if you're not familiar with the idea of a superconductor, you know, imagine that, the power's out in the neighborhood in everybody's house except ours. And one of the neighbors comes by, lives a mile down the street. He says, geez, I see you still got power on it. I need some power. There's something broken and I need to drill and I don't have. So have you got any extension cords? Could I borrow some power? And I said, sure, yeah, here. I have a couple of hundreds, 10-foot extension cords, you know, little tiny cords. Here you go, tie them all together. And so plug in all those, it goes a mile down the road. Now, if we measured in the wall where the one end of the extension cord is plugged in here at my house, it would register 120 volts. But because those wires are so small, typically, you know, if you've just got a 1/6-foot cord, there's not much resistance in that. But if you've got a mile of them, the minute you pull the trigger on your drill and the current starts to flow, there's a great deal of resistance in all of that wire. And so while I've got 120 volts here at the plug, on the other end where the drill is plugged in, I might have 60 volts. And that 60 volts will cause the resistance change in the motor of the drill so that perhaps the drill even burns out. Now, if you were a neighbor and said, hey, I'm a mile down the road, I need power, can you help me? I've got a superconductor. I've got a mile-long superconductor. I plug it in this end, measures 120 volts. On the other end, no matter how much current I draw, it still measures 120 volts. That's the superconductor. And so the drill's going to work on the other end. Well, in exactly the same way, if we're in this resistant state, then there's not a proper flow. But when we go into the still point process, it's like the instrument is fully fueled and what has been locked away and hidden away from the past will start to open and show itself. So in still point, people go into this high-speed fast-forward process that, well, you know, it's hard to talk about. It's hard to put into words. But it leads to experiences that, somewhat like Yeshua said 2,000 years ago, there's so many things I would like to say to you, but you can't hear them. Oftentimes people cut off still point, and they're like, they're at a loss for words. It's like, well, this awesome, you know, amazing, I don't even know how to describe it thing happened. Yeah, it's moving into that superconductor state. Whatever's been locked down is liberated to the degree that one is ready to handle whatever in their lives, and or I've seen it often happen that people touch into generational patterns, things that have happened in, you know, grandfather, great-great-grandmother's lives. And they, those experiences come present for them. And they can be experiences that were painful experiences that have been held and locked in the system. But in the still point process, one can touch into the deepest layers and the deepest levels of pain. And there's no pain to it. It's just, it's like they're the observer. Here I am in this space and it opens, or they can step into just wildly, wonderfully ecstatic states that perhaps have gone on in their generations. And they can just be in those states and enjoy them. So the person who's in distraught, disturbance and upset over something touches in the still point process, and it moves into this peaceful place where the trauma energy of the experience is simply, I guess the best way I could say it, it's deleted. It's gone. They can look back at that experience that, you know, for years they said, oh, I never want to look at that. No, I don't want to deal with that. Don't make me look there. And they can go back to that, and they can stand in a space of connected bliss, literally, totally connected to love, and have that memory come forward and speak about it, deal with it, process through it without trauma. It's just an amazing, amazing tool. So if you're interested in joining us for that, Saturday is the day. We'll be doing that. And if you want to drop a note to Jeannie at her email address and let her know if you're interested, then we'll look forward to welcome you to it. Beyond that, Jeannie, any other thoughts for you? Is there anything else in your mind for announcements at this point? Excuse my throat for still being a little froggy.
No, just tomorrow and Saturday. So that's got it. And I'm not sure if she already had her hand up talking to Dr. Tim or if she put it up again. I looked away from the switchboard for a moment, so I'm going to check and see. Susan, did you put your hand up again?
I didn't put my hand up again, but I'm right here. Yeah.
How are you doing today?
You, Michael?
It's coming along. Actually, it's feeling much better. I'm probably 80% through it, so feeling
good.
A whole lot better.
Well, I'm glad. Good.
So am I. Big time.
Oh, yeah.
It's been kind of strange because the day before, or pardon me, the day that I left Joel's, you know, he was doing a lot of clearing of his lungs, and I was right there with him, and I had my hands on him and speaking to him. And then we had no idea he had COVID. Both he and his wife had COVID at that point. And, you know, I was kind of right there in his face. And fortunately, you know, I've tested twice and you know, I'm clear of it, but I do have this froggy thing going on in my throat, but it's down to, you know, about 10%. So I'm happy that I'm getting through it this quickly and easily, and that I stayed clear of COVID.
Yeah. When did you test for it?
Well, I had no idea there was anything going on, and I had no symptoms. I left Joel's bedside on Friday morning, or actually Thursday afternoon. I went up the airport's about an hour and a half from the hospital he was in, and so I drove up to the hospital Thursday. They had an 8 a.m. flight in the morning. So I left there, flew up to Boston, did the event that I was doing in Boston, and flew back. And that's when I had found out on, that would have been Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So Sunday night, Saturday about 2 a.m., his son contacted me and said that they had tested him for COVID and that he passed away. So I was, you know, on my way back here when I found that out. And rather than, you know, get in the car and drive home, I stopped and found a test just to make sure that, you know, I was clear. I wasn't going to come home to Jeannie and Aria if I had COVID. So Jeannie had set up for me to go into a timeshare for a week to deal with it if that happened. But I was clear. And, you know, I had these symptoms, but until then I had no symptoms. I didn't know there was anything, you know, there was nothing going on. And then so I got back here Monday morning about 5:30, and I did another test just because I was, you know, my throat was pretty tight at that point. And so I did another test and it was still clear. So just one of the things that I did, you know, when I was away, I think I shared a little bit about this treatment protocol that I did with probiotics, where this scientist has identified 16 specific necessary probiotics that for most people have just been wiped out by, you know, the sad diet, the standard American way of thinking and living. And so the treatment was a replacement for those. And it was really just very physically profound more than anything. It was pretty sweet. And I think probably what happened is as a result of that, I just went into a healing crisis and, you know, there's a layer of stuff to be cleared out. And so I'm clearing it out and quite happily doing it. Not comfortably, but happily.
Oh, yeah. Well, congratulations. Are you going to test anymore? Because I've heard weird things about long negative tests and then suddenly there's a positive one. You sound good. I don't want to put a...
Yeah, I'm on the other side of it. I mean, yeah, my throat is it's really the only place. I have a little bit of it in my upper chest, but it's, you know, almost been totally in my throat. And it's at least 80% to 90% better. So, no, I don't think I'm going to bother doing another test. I think I'm okay. I'm on it.
Good. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. So how about you? How are things going with number one grandson?
Yeah, it's the middle one, Jacob. Thank you so much for suggesting I write a letter. I was in the middle of the letter when I got an apology from him by text. And he said, "I'm sorry for offending you yesterday." Well, he wants his allowance, and I know all about that. So I'm sorry for offending you. Thank God he didn't say, "I'm sorry if I offended you." He really said, "I'm sorry for offending you." And I used my letter truncated into the text I answered with.
Right.
And I would love to check it out with you. It's short. Is it okay if I read it?
Sure. Please do. Yes. I'd love
to
hear what it turned
into. I said, "You did not offend me." Sorry? I didn't hear what
you said. I was just saying, yes, I'd love to hear what transpired, what you wrote, and how his response went.
Thanks. I said, "You didn't offend me, but when you speak that way, I worry that you will go out in the world and mess up your relationships. I got scared for you. I felt very sad that you became enraged in that old familiar way that has hurt you and your brothers so deeply. I accept your apology. I'm at a meeting, but we'll send the dough in a little while." And then a couple of hearts and a tearful face icons. And so I hope that's responsible language. It all happened too fast. I didn't have the time to curate what I said. So what do you think?
Sure.
Is that okay?
It sounds like it's moving things in the right direction. The one piece I would add to the puzzle is, you know, in terms of your concern for him, is that idea from the worksheet that says, "I get the original, you get the carbon copy." And, you know, and I usually add tongue-in-cheek, and, you know, the person who you sent the carbon copy to may not be home for delivery, so it comes right back to you, but informing him that, remember that you're the one who hurts from the hurt energy you put out. It looks like it's toward others, but it has to go into your field first, and, you know, maybe that'll help him to think about what he's doing a little more. Although
I have said that to him, but it bears repeating, for sure.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Let me read you the after messages.
Right.
He said, "I always mess up my relationships, but it's okay." And I said, "You don't have to, not necessary." And then he said, "I'd rather be me than coddle others." And I said, "Good grief, Jake, try something in the middle, not at one extreme end of the spectrum or the other. But of course, it's up to you." And very snidely, I imagine, he said, "Thanks for your advice." So but then it went on from there, and we've had good discussions. And at one point he said, you know, and of course he may be buttering up. I know the mood swings. One thing, I won't even go into that. What I'd like to ask you is, I said, Jake, you do not have to blow when you get triggered. And he said, I absolutely do. I have no control over it. My dad didn't have any control of it. And I said, but you're not your dad. And your dad could get control over it if he had enough of the right tools and support. But you're young and you've got tools and you've got people who love you no matter what. You can dare to stop and breathe and step back and not react until you have evened out your mood. You don't have to blow. And he said, but I'm bipolar. Bipolar people blow.
Yeah.
They don't have
good
control.
Excuse.
Yeah. And I said, first of all, I don't believe you're bipolar. And if you are, I have two friends who are bipolar and they manage it. They get triggered and they want to blow and they may go into their bedroom and pound a pillow, but they do not destroy relationships. You don't have to. And it ended up being a good discussion. I said, when you get here, we're going to really hit the tarmac. We're going to get to work. I don't know what you can tolerate, but you're going to be ready to go back to school and have good relationships when you go back to school. You don't have to do this anymore. And he said, you know, you're the only person that I can talk to about this stuff. I love you for it. And I hope he meant that. Isn't that cool?
Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
So,
I mean, that he's got somewhere to go in a world where all the professionals are telling, oh, well, too bad, we can only drug you so you can shut it off. There's nothing you can do about it.
Right. Well, it all came from your suggestion of writing that letter. It got my brain around enough to be able to say something that wasn't just more of the same junk. So thanks for that. And I have hope again.
You're welcome.
But Michael Al-Anon says don't hope too much because it's like reinstating a goal. Just watch what's happening and stay neutral. Keep the loving space and watch because they may repeat and repeat and repeat until you're no longer on the planet or they may not, but it's up to them. And I'm glad to be reminded of that because I have been kind of a yo-yo. When he's doing well, I feel better. And when he's doing badly, I feel badly. And that's just not the way it should be.
Well, and, you know, my input would be set your goals as high as you possibly can, as high as you think are reasonable to set. And then if your goals are frustrated, you get to look at your next piece of work. And that's why you're not yo-yoing so much, because you've been doing your work each time he plays this out. And so for me, it would be, you know, the only reason you can possibly be an upset is that there's upset in you. And of course, we know that it's always a goal that drives that. So that's the next time, the next opportunity for you to cancel that goal and look at that next level of upset. And who knows, you've heard me say this before, maybe he's a fully conscious, spiritual, realized being, and he's just here to show everybody how to learn forgiveness for themselves.
Well,
who knows?
I tell you, who knows? Right.
Where is he in the birth order?
The middle boy. Luke is the oldest, Jake, and then Max.
And what are their ages?
My daughter's 23, 21, and 17 or 18 almost.
17. So he was 3 or 4. So a question you can ask, I've had children as young as 3 or 4 who've been asked the question, do you remember the first time you saw or held your baby brother?
Oh, nice.
And I've had adults who were children in that age range, and they remembered the sweetness. They remembered the presence of love. And that might be a place where if he has that memory, or if he doesn't respond to that with a memory, sharing what your memory is of holding his youngest brother, and then reminding him, so that's the truth of your brother. Now notice he hasn't always functioned that way, and notice you don't always function that way, but that's the truth about you. That's the truth about all of us. It's another seed to, oh, I don't have to be this lost bipolar kid. I can remember and function out of who I am. And that stuff is just your mind, son. And you can, you've got, if you decide to use the tools, total charge over your mind.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, the pharmaceutical industry isn't interested in telling people that it's possible to heal. They're interested in creating customers that hopefully are lifelong. That's very well known about the pharmaceutical industry.
I know. That's very frustrating.
Something outside of you is frustrating? Really?
Quiet, Michael.
I'll have to look into that. I didn't know that. I didn't know that was possible.
You don't miss a trick. Okay.
Just doing my job, ma'am. Just doing my job.
I know. He also told me about his earliest memories of his dad, and they are pretty bad, but he's talking about them. So it's just good. Something is loosening up, and he's talking about, you know, the threats, the blow-ups, the in-your-face yelling. You know what he said? He said, "I always hoped my dad would hit me, because then I could go to the police and say that there is abuse in my house." But he never hit me. He just said horrible things, and I didn't understand that that, too, was abuse.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So I don't know whether police would have responded to non-physical abusive abuse. Maybe not. Maybe he knew something. He's a bright kid. Maybe he did some research, but he would wait for the hit, and the hit never came.
Well, it's interesting, you know, up until just a couple of years ago, there was legislation that had been passed in the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years or 15 years, that let me back up a little bit. Prior to this new legislation that came in, the definition of spousal abuse, and it was basically around women, was, you know, you had to prove you were physically assaulted. And then there were new definitions where mental abuse and emotional abuse became as criminal as physical assault. Now, unfortunately, do some research on it. And unfortunately, you know, there were a lot of spousal abusers in the last administration, and they changed the definition. They got rid of that so that, no, a policeman can't come in unless there are bruises, unless there's some proof of physical abuse. Then there was no abuse. I don't know how that applies with children, but I know that that law was changed in this last administration to reduce the possibility of an abusive man being charged with abusing his spouse. That was changed.
Oh, my God.
Disappeared.
That is amazing.
The previous administration had brought that in, that, you know, you can't do mental and emotional abuse with the spouse. And then this last one disappeared that, which is just, I mean, you know, we were making a lot of advances in terms of functioning as human beings up until this last round of just rage and craziness, frankly.
Yep. Ooh, I didn't know that. That's really a big deal. Yeah.
It was a very big, I mean, I saw that. This goes back maybe, I don't know, 3.5, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, something like that. And it was just like shocking.
Who initiated that? Who initiated the change of that law?
Well, who was in charge of the administration last round?
Okay.
Without getting into politics. You know, it's just,
All right.
It's like, you know,
I didn't hear about that. That's
and insane.
Really, that is jazz, yep.
So it's definitely wake-up time once again.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly continue to hold the space for that young man and surround him in light and love. You know, he did respond once to my phone call, but I haven't heard back from him again. I'll take another try and see if I can reach him again and have a conversation.
Well, that's very nice of you. You know, if you can, I just don't know how to make that connection myself. It would have to happen between you and him.
Yeah.
Well, you're softening the ground. I'll keep trying until I, you know, he did return my call once and I wasn't available, and I haven't heard from him since. So I will try again.
Thanks, Michael. Well, he comes home here to us in a week, next Saturday night, 10 o'clock. His bus rolls in from New York, and he'll be with us for 3 weeks and a half, something like that. And we
so he's made it through the program.
Yeah, he's kind of blown off part of it. I asked him, has it been good? And he said, yeah, parts of it are good. And I said, what'd you get out of it? And he said, well, I made a few nice contacts, and maybe I made a friend, but I'm not sure. And he's really not terribly enthusiastic. It was a gamble, but the alternative would have been for him to work at Dunkin' Donuts or something and have terrible anxiety attacks because the orders come in too fast, and he gets really upset and agitated, and then he probably would have just quit and come home and slept for 6 weeks. So it was a way of keeping him occupied, but it sure was expensive. Boy, I mean, it's really a program for privileged kids, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's not easy to pull somebody out of a depressed state into an enthusiastic state, so I can understand why perhaps you'll move into full enthusiasm, but it sounds like perhaps some doorways opened, and we'll see what ensues. Have you heard any more from the relative who's one of his teachers?
Oh, no, I haven't, and I wish I could, but, I don't know what he has done to change what he might have done with Jake. I do know that he gave him a role in a special cold reading of a new script, and Jacob was very excited about it, and then he called afterwards and said it went really well. So perhaps that's the sort of thing, but he has kept his own counsel. Someday I'll have a talk with him, I guess, again. But no, I haven't. One day I think I got what they call a butt call from him. When somebody calls you and hangs up right away, you know they probably didn't mean to call you. So I didn't call back.
Right.
And he didn't leave a message. So,
hold the space. Continue joining you in that.
Thanks, Michael. And thank you, Jeannie. Yeah.
And Jeannie's dad, how's he doing?
Well, I talked to him this morning, and they said that he's still not running any fever and not coughing. No real outward appearance that he's got it. It was the speech therapist that when she was visiting with him on Monday that she heard the rattle in his lungs, and that's why they did the test. But he's kept his appetite up and everything, so I'm hoping that it just stays this way. That would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. Good for him.
Yeah.
Mr. Sturdy.
Yeah.
For sure. Well,
thank you for asking.
He's got a strong foundation. You know, he was born and raised on a farm with real food and a family that was pretty connected. So he's got a good foundation. He's still, I mean, he's 90 now, or almost 90.
Wow.
Since he had COVID, he's had a lot of muscle mass, you know, reduced. But before then, I mean, if you touched him, you knew you were touching somebody of substance. I mean, he still had, he was still pretty well muscled. Unfortunately, that's deteriorated somewhat while he's been in the hospital and in this care. But he's a strong man.
Yeah. All right. So he's still isolated then, huh?
Yes.
Yeah,
they've pretty much locked down the facility, and people are staying in their own rooms. You know, they have a common dining room, but they're not using that. They're delivering food to the rooms. And
right.
So it's a big challenge for everybody because they're not overly staffed as it is. Even they're, you know, serving food in common area and all. It's definitely another load and level of stress. And some of the employees have gotten COVID as well, so it's not an easy time for anybody.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for having me check in. Appreciate it.
All right, young lady, any other thoughts for you?
Nope.
All right. We appreciate you, cherish you, and honor you.
Except the Webb, if you've seen the Webb telescope pictures, those are mind-blowing.
No, I haven't.
Photos of the universe. Ah, wait till you see them. It was like doing a worksheet to see them. It was like being released from a lot of, well, to see how vast and gorgeous the universe is.
Oh.
And to see the mind energy started that, which was love energy started that. It just made all my woes shrink in a very good and healthy way down to a much smaller size.
Awesome.
See, and to feel like part of that rather than insignificant, which is where my ego used to go. I think,
right.
Oh, pound my chest. I'm in here with you guys. It was just a beautiful experience to see them. And if you have a big computer screen, I think it's the New York Times, but I'm not sure. Somebody put up a video that's not long, but it shows you slides of the pictures of these, what, 13 point something billion years ago. They are now reaching our telescope so we can see what the beginnings of the universe looked like.
Right.
Unbelievable. So I didn't have anything more to say, right? Right.
Sweet. You know, I think, I'm not sure who it was. Was it Einstein or Jung that said, either great beauty or great trauma leads to awakening? And so being touched by that beauty is powerful. We'll have to look it up. I wasn't aware that
you're
up there.
Yeah. You're up there. Webb, you know, interstellar telescope or whatever they call it. Amazing.
Sweet. Awesome. Thanks for letting us know.
Yeah. You'll love them.
All right. Well, tell Tim we said hello and we send our love and we appreciate you. All right. Blessings. Take care.
Thanks, Michael. Yep.
All right. Bye. Bye-bye. So if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and we will be having a conversation. So give us a call. How can we support you? What's on your mind?
I have a question in the chat room.
Oh, great. Let's go for it.
Someone says that they burnt their eye when they were watching fireworks. And the doctor did a treatment, prescribed antibiotic, and now they are having side effects like headaches, dizziness, drowsiness. And they wanted to know, was there anything natural that they could use to both heal their burnt eye and to also maybe counter those side effects?
You know, I mean, all of the above. Some of the things that support the eye. You know, carrots have carotene, and carotene feeds the eye. They're some of the, that's one of the natural things that supports the eye health. And I know that there are, if you do some research, there are some vitamins out there that have been formulated to support the eye, formulated by ophthalmologists, medical doctors who take care of eyes. And so you might just want to do some research and see what kind of supplementation or what different formulas are out there, you know, created specifically to support the eye and healing. I'd say that might be helpful. That would be my best suggestion.
All righty. So 563-999-3581. And press 1.
And then we'll be having a conversation, and we'd love to have a conversation with you. How can we support you? How are the tools moving in your life? How are the results showing up? Do you need support with anything that ties in with the tools that we're offering, the forgiveness process? And, of course, the nutritional aspect of supporting the structure with actual food. I've shared recently, and I think it's such an important key at least that come home to me, is that just like in order to, say, for instance, to have a fetus grow, you have to have a live body for that to happen in. So it is with food. You have to have a live body for the food to grow out of. And that means that you have to actually have soil to grow food in, and that you can't grow food in dirt. Dirt is soil where the life has been killed. There's a video out there, if I remember correctly, the title of it is Kiss the Ground or Kiss the Earth. And one of the things that they're saying is that we've got about 60 years of soil left on the earth, that there's actual life in the soil. Otherwise, chemical farming, the chemical industry, the agribusiness basically kills the soil. And then they've got dirt, and they plant something in it, and they put chemicals in it to make it look like food. You know, the seed is there, so the seed takes what it's got. It's kind of like, my take would be, it's like you're debilitating a seed, and then you're boosting it with things that don't have anything to do with growing that food in any natural way, shape, or form, and you force it to grow using chemicals. And so if you think more and more about what it takes to actually eat food and nourish yourself, look for getting back to, knowing your farmer, supporting your local farmer, growing your own gardens. That's what we've been doing the last 3 years here. We've probably, we're on a piece of land that hasn't seen an ounce of soil probably in 50 years. And we've now got gardens that are just, leaves of some of our plants are 20, 25 inches wide. Things are just, we've got three separate garden spaces that we've started in the last 3.5 years, and they're just like, exploding the food. And it's taken a fair bit of study to come to understand how to build soil, actual soil that has life in it. Lots of videos on YouTube. YouTube University is very useful in that regard. And so there are lots of experts out there who really know their stuff about soil and how you can build your own and then actually grow real honest-to-God food. And the flavors of the food are just so far beyond what you buy in a grocery store. Aria the other morning came over and she had, 8 or 10 tomatoes. Jeannie, that was her breakfast. She picked them right off the vine and chowed down on them. Yesterday morning when she got here about 7 o'clock, went out to, her dad brought her and I went out and said, "Hey there, shall we go out and check out the garden?" "Yeah, let's go see what the tomatoes are doing." So she's up on my shoulders and off we go to the garden. And eating these tomatoes is like eating candy. It's amazing to just have that knowledge. I've always promoted fresh and raw food, but never really thought about the life that has to be in the soil for real life to come out of the soil. And so just something to think about is another factor in how we keep ourselves really alive and well and healthy. And certainly for whoever asked the question about the eye and the burn, extend love in your direction and support and hold space for healing. And we've got about 15 minutes left, so we've got lots of time for conversation. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? 563-999-3581. Push 1. Let's have a conversation. And if there's no conversation to be had, then Miss Jeannie, what do you think? Shall we just say thank you to everybody for joining us and take some time with Aria Rain and call it a day?
Let's give them just a minute. Press 1 if you want to talk. Otherwise, we will call it.
I would much rather have a conversation with someone, whatever's on your mind, whatever we can do to support, whatever we can explain. And let's just
going once.
Sold.
All right.
Well, thank you all for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.